Thanks, and thanks for sticking around. I'm glad to have a chance to share some of the preliminary results from some research I was conducting in Kenya last spring looking at nitrous oxide emissions as a kind of case study for looking at the impacts of a green revolution on greenhouse gas emissions, and would like to acknowledge my co-authors here. Of course, the green revolution in the second half of the 20th century was a tremendous success, increasing food production, cutting the number of rural poor, but it largely bypassed Africa. Even in areas where improved varieties were adopted, the yield gains were relatively modest. And today we have over 180 million Africans who lack access to adequate food resources. That's twice the number as in 1970. And part of this can be attributed to issues with soil fertility. So on average across 37 sub-Saharan African countries over the last 30 years, you've seen very substantial net nutrient deficits. In the case of nitrogen, it's 22 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year being removed from these systems. And this problem is compounded by the fact that fertilizer use in sub-Saharan Africa is extremely low, on average only 8 kilograms per hectare per year. And that's in contrast to here in the United States, where it's about 100 on average, or in places like the Netherlands or China, where it's 200 or 220. So there's a tremendous gap there in fertilizer use in terms of what farmers are using there, and there are yields of only about a ton on average in a lot of areas. So yields are stagnating, and fertilizer use has been seen as an important tool to increasing yields. And it has there have been some tremendous successes at national scale in Malawi and through development projects such as the Millennium Village Project, where fertilizer subsidies have resulted almost overnight in doubling or tripling of yields. And so there's been a call for, as part of a new green revolution in Africa, substantial increases in fertilizer use. The goal set by the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa is reaching an average of 50 kilograms per hectare by 2015. So we're also talking about a substantial shift in nutrient additions to these systems. And so as a consequence, there's of course reason to be a little bit aware of what this means for emissions of nitrous oxide. Here we have our standard cartoon of the nitrogen cycle. And one would assume that as you're adding fertilizer, you're increasing rates of nitrification and denitrification, and you'd expect that nitrous oxide emissions would increase as well. But we have a very paltry understanding of nitrous oxide emissions from sub-Saharan Africa. These are all of the studies where nitrous oxide has been measured, either in the field or in a lab. And it's only those two that are circled in Western Africa where emissions from additions of inorganic fertilizer have been measured. So I would argue that by the time that our first speaker finishes her master's work, there will be more measurements of nitrous oxide from a vineyard in California than in all of sub-Saharan Africa. And so that brings me to the questions that I'll be talking about today, which is really what are the dynamics of nitrous oxide emissions in response to incremental increases in fertilizer addition, trying to create a response function relating nitrous oxide emissions to fertilizer additions. A very simple idea, but one that hasn't ever been done in sub-Saharan Africa. And trying to see if there are some nonlinear threshold effects in there. Ultimately, we're going to want to look at this all in the context of yield, as our colleague working in Australia did, because it's going to be very important to match these two, I would argue. But at this point, we're still processing some of the yield data, and in addition, there will also be additional gas data that is continuing to be analyzed. So we're interested in smallholder agricultural systems. These are some photos of typical smallholder fields in western Kenya near where this experiment was conducted. You can see that it's maize, subsistence agriculture done at a small scale, typically a hectare or less in area. So we created our own little experimental smallholder farm in Maseno. Everything from field preparation, harrowing, planting, fertilizing, weeding, and harvesting was done as it would be done by a smallholder farmer. And using the recommended management for the region, except for the increasing rates of fertilizer use. Maseno is near Lake Victoria, experiences considerable rainfall, so water is generally not a limiting factor here. Two rainy seasons, the longer one starting in late February, early March, is when we conducted our experiment. And soils in the region, in the area, are typically deficient in both nitrogen and phosphorus. The design was a standard randomized complete block design with five different levels of fertilizer application ranging from 0 to 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, replicated across four blocks. We sampled weekly, but after each fertilization event, we sampled daily for 7 days to get higher resolution of those responses. And fertilizer application was split into two events. One third of the fertilizer was applied in a basal application at planting, and the other two thirds were applied 4 weeks later at top dressing. Gas sampling was done using your standard static chamber technique for nitrous oxide, and we also did methane, analyzing the samples later on a GC fitted with a flame ionization detector and an electron capture detector. We measured CO2 dynamically in the field using a Licor 7000. And because of the way that fertilizer is applied in this system, we were strategic about how we positioned our chambers. So fertilizer is applied during the basal application directly in the seeding hole. And so we positioned the chamber over the seeding hole for the first 3 weeks. Prior to top dressing, we repositioned the chamber to be between two plants. And at top dressing application, the fertilizer is applied by hand immediately adjacent to the plant. So we were able to cover a single plant's worth of fertilizer in this positioning. Of course, this is not representative of what's being emitted at this field scale. So here you see a little bit before weeding. We added a chamber between rows so that we would be able to estimate field scale fluxes and have something that would be comparable to other studies in literature. So getting back again, the basic questions here are trying to create a response function for nitrous oxide relating that to increasing fertilizer rates. And the first set of data I'll be showing you, because we had the chamber moved, we did two separate analyses. One, the response to the basal application of fertilizer. A second, the response to the top dressing. Here you're seeing the response to the basal application. Date is on the x-axis, nitrous oxide flux in nanograms of nitrogen per centimeter squared per hour on the y. And the arrow indicates the fertilization date. And we have the fertilizer application rates ranging from gray at 0, light yellow to 50, and then up to the dark red in 200. And you're seeing there's no relationship here between fertilizer application and nitrous oxide flux. And I would argue that that's for the simple reason that instead what you're seeing is the pulse of nitrous oxide emissions in response to what are some of the first precipitation events of the season. So immediately prior, in the 3 weeks before the sampling started, the field it had been completely dry. The field was heavily disturbed, harrowed, prepared, planted. And so here what I would argue you're seeing is that pulse, the birch effect, essentially, in these systems. And we did a small wetting experiment before planting, before the onset of the rain. Here you have hours after wetting on the X, nitrous oxide fluxes in blue and on the left-hand side of the Y-axis. And you see this nice sort of typical pulse in response to wetting, mirroring what we were seeing in the previous slide. You can almost ignore the stuff that's happening after 20 hours because we had a little precipitation affecting things there. Now, when we go to the response to the top dressing application, axes are the same as in the first graph, and the arrow is the date of top dressing application. We begin to see the emergence of a pattern looking a little bit more like what we might expect. And again, this is two-thirds of the fertilizer was applied at this time. So we see what appears to be a clear increase in nitrous oxide fluxes in response to the 200 kilogram treatment. It becomes a little bit more muddy with the other treatments, but we can try to settle that out a little bit by looking at the average flux. Here on the x-axis, we have treatment levels and the average nitrous oxide flux on the y for the basal and top dressing application. Again, no relationship between fertilizer rate and emissions for the basal application, but we see the emergence of what is potentially a very interesting pattern in the top dressing application, where there's no change in nitrous oxide emission as you increase fertilizer rate up to 100 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. But that somewhere between 100 and 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, we cross a threshold. And we see a large increase, essentially a doubling of nitrous oxide flux over those lower levels of fertilization. Now, of course, this is just one site and one season. So it's important not to really start generalizing, but it is an intriguing pattern, and particularly because recommended rates of nitrogen fertilizer addition in this region range from about 70 to 80 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. In that region where there's no effect here of fertilizer rate on nitrous oxide flux. And it's also, just to put this in some context, because the units are maybe ones that you're not used to thinking about, but these are very low compared to what you might see, say, in the Kellogg Biological Research Station and fields there. You'll be seeing at rates of, say, 34 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare what we're getting at 200. And by the time you reach 100 there, you're talking about two or three times what we get from 200. So these are relatively low rates of nitrous oxide flux. And just quickly, we're not seeing a relationship between methane or CO2 and fertilizer rate here. And I just wanted to show you those data in that context. But certainly not the focus of the talk today. But in conclusion, it does appear that we have a threshold, that there's a nonlinear response of nitrous oxide emissions to fertilizer additions, and it is one that is worth investigating further, whereas there's no clear effect relating fertilizer rate to methane or CO2. And with that, I would like to acknowledge some people who helped make this work possible, as well as a couple of funding sources, and would be happy to answer some questions.
Thank you.
Please, could you comment a bit on the yield-related emissions?
I would love to. We have, literally within about a week, I will have the yield data. Yes?
Jonathan, I know there's a lot of work done in the Western Canyon on the improved phthalo systems as well in the 90s and 2000s. And I can't remember one of those points. Was my work done in the early 2000s? I bet I have it. But is there any attempt to, is, for instance, improved phthalo still going on there? Is there a lot of adoption there? Or is there any potential for integrating these improved phthalo systems with the synthetic fertilizer applications? If you say that these low levels of synthetic fertilizer are meant to be there for a long time to come, you're showing levels of 200, whereas 50 might be a goal.
Right.
Are there opportunities for integrating the synthetic with the residues from organics?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think that should be the goal. Is you know, the issue in one issue at least is trying to understand how yield is going to respond as well. So the organic should be, you know, a critical goal. I think initially, the real goal here is food, right? So you want to make sure that that's the goal that you're meeting, rather than minimizing nitrous oxide emissions, especially when relative to every other part of the world, these are tiny. Yeah.
Jonathan, I didn't catch the numbers to be able to sort of express your results in something akin to an emission factor. You know, the
Yes.
Heard about IPCC problems here, and you know, our wheat systems in Australia are commonly running at, you know, less than a tenth of a percent, up to a couple of tenths of a percent, as Clement showed.
So there are, as I mentioned, there are about 2 months more worth, 2 months of additional gas data that is just finished. I just finished analyzing, or at least on the GC. So I haven't had a chance to look at those data yet. So before I want to look, you know. On the other hand, so what I'm talking about is this is a very limited set of the data that we've collected. But based on those, just looking at the response to the top dressing application, it's less than a tenth of a percent. But that's, you're looking at an emission over the course of the first week or so. But it's when you'd, I mean, we were seeing some nice spikes there. But it's probably...
I just wanted to point out the size of the unit.
Right. Yeah, so it's considerably less than a tenth of a percent. Yeah. Yes, please.
Your methane fluxes, and temperate systems usually get negative fluxes, but yours seem to be hovering around zero.
Yeah.
Would you comment on that?
I would prefer, I haven't thought a whole lot about it. Let's see if there's a way to go back. But it's true. You know, there's a certain amount of variability in there. We're not seeing any consumption there. It's, you know, I don't know what the, so unfortunately we had some soils that we were going to use to characterize the microbial community here and try to look at some of the function of what was present and what wasn't, considering that these soils, you know, starting off are probably pretty nutrient depleted, and seeing how that might affect the community. Unfortunately, those soils didn't quite make it through customs.
What's the pH of the soil?
I don't know. So we're also finishing up some of the soil work.
Yeah, for each N2 emission flux, how many gas samples, for how long it take it?
For the nitrous oxide, sorry, I should have mentioned that. So we took four samples over the course of a half an hour.
Four samples?
Yeah. Every 10 minutes. Linear increase in the concentration over time.
Continue with that. What's your replication?
We had four blocks and one plot within each. So you know, the level of replication is rather small, but we're seeing a relatively, you know, if you look at these error bars.
Were quite small compared to the variability we're seeing in the data. I'm just puzzled by that.
These would be standard errors, but nevertheless, we are seeing pretty tight emission. You know, there's not a huge amount of variation between plots here. There's, in some cases, you see a little bit more than others, but the standard error bar is going to be smaller than the standard deviation bar. And I should have mentioned that.
So you're saying you've only got one static chamber per plot?
That's right. So in total, there are 20, there's four blocks, five plots per block, so you have 20 chambers. But again, we're talking about adding substantial amounts of nitrogen here in most of these. So we sampled daily for a week after each fertilization event, and we also sampled weekly in addition to that. So I think in this, you know, on the right-hand side, you're seeing average of 7 days. On the left-hand side, you're seeing an average of about 11.
There are two systems in Western Kenya. Did you see any seasonality effect on the night results or in the day?
Sorry, any what effects?
There are two systems in Western Kenya.
Yes, so this was, right. We only measured during the wet season. So the only attempt to look at differences or at least transitions there was the wetting experiment. Otherwise, we didn't make any measurements during the dry season.
How big are your chambers and call?
Yeah, sure. So this gives you a sense of the size. I think it's 24 centimeter diameter. They're very similar. They're not actually the Peter Grofman chamber. These have been manufactured in Nairobi, but they were, I think, designed perhaps by Lou Verchaux, so they would probably then be based on Peter's.
So when you do your, just a follow-up question, when you do the calculation for N2O, how do you do that?
What I should say is that I have not done that yet. So the emissions you're seeing here in addition, sorry, wrong direction, these are directly from the chamber that is covering the fertilizer area. So I would expect that, you know, the inter-row chambers are somewhere in that range of the lower emission rates.
This is worst case scenario.
So exactly.
Did you speculate on why they're so much lower than you might see with similar additions?
I hesitate to do that without, so right now the yield data, just the mass and the yield of the biomass and the grain is being finished. I'm going to send all that for nitrogen concentration analysis. And I also have some nitrate and ammonium data that's just coming back. So I don't know what's happening in these soils at all, and I hesitate to really comment before I have a sense of what's going on with the nitrogen dynamics, both with the soils and the plants.
What kind of concentration you usually see, N2O concentration after 30 minutes in the flux chamber?
I don't know offhand. The actual concentration after 30 minutes. I've been thinking about the fluxes. I haven't been thinking about the concentrations. I mean, I have all those data sitting right over there, but I'd be happy to share it with you later.
Just an observation of the questions that are being raised about your flux rates that are, or the magnitude of your flux, is that in systems in Brazil, Michael Broder and others have indicated that their rates are much lower in tropical systems than is typically hypothesized. And so our assumptions that tropical systems, because of the moisture-temperature relationships, would be much higher than our temperate systems, that hypothesis doesn't always hold up.
Unless you're talking about tropical forests, I suppose.
That's different.
Or should we have where there are 5 times, 3 to 5 times higher than our systems?
You're not measuring denitrification rate.
No, this is there just aren't the facilities to do it.
Low carbon, right?
So. Presumably, yeah. Again, that's some data I'll get when the soil work is done.
But these soils are, I mean, they're the typical fertile soil, very well drained. I mean, the typical microstructure you have. So, I mean, I think when you talk about these lower levels, it's just the soil structure of these kinds of soils that is just much more porous. I mean, I don't know your moisture contents, but they're probably not too high.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't have any data on those yet. They're still, I'm still waiting for a little bit. But, I mean, you know, for a few days after it rains, you are walking around in mud in those fields.
Yeah, it goes really quickly because it's that fertile soil. By the way, I do think in your Africa map, there are a few more. Things.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm missing one or two. But I've looked really hard.
I mean, I don't think it's only Neville that identified that there is more than that.
I would please share.
No problem.
Okay.
Any more questions for Jonathan? Any more questions for our previous speakers?
Actually, I do have one. A lot of farmers in the area, maybe up north in Vitala or in Goma, they actually use a lot of legumes mixed with corn, like lavlav or so. Are you planning on doing some comparative studies from nitrous oxide additions or emissions from
systems? So there have been a number of studies like that done. It's not in my near-term plan. There's some proposal that is to do some work using some new technologies, including a tunable diode laser, to try to get some sort of sense of the field scale fluxes, because of course we all know about the heterogeneity in space and time of these. So there are plans. It's open as to whether I'll be part of them.
Question for Dr. Cappagelli.
All right, thank you. One more question for our previous speakers.
My question was, and you're relating the nitrous oxide emission factors for fertilized no-till and conventional till and comparing them with organic, you use poultry manure. And I was wondering what kind of available nitrogen rate you were assuming from your poultry manure application, how much of your total N applied were you assuming would be available during the growing season of the crop?
The calculation I showed were based on total
right.
Nitrogen.
Right.
We apply. We do the calculation based on the proportion of ammonium, the concentration of ammonium, and the proportion of the organic anion that you normalize based on the inverse of the
okay.
So it's like, if I remember correctly, it's 50% of the organic becomes available that first year, by that simple model. And all the ammonium, because we incorporated the first day that we right away.
That helps, but my point is that when we look at the expressions of our emissions, we need to consider the available nitrogen because the pool for poultry manure in many environments is down to that 50 to 60% of the total land that's available, and as a consequence, when you express it on that basis, then those emission factors become more comparable.
Yeah, and doesn't IPCC do total with it?
I think they may, but I'm not in complete agreement with that.
I agree, and I just did it for that case. I did that calculation, as you say, at an earlier talk a couple of years ago about the 2010 data. And the organic still had a low of